Yeah. Hey, Kenny, let that play a little bit more. Just a little bit. I want some juice.
Let's let it breathe a little bit.
Let it marinate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I like it. I like that.
It's about that time. Nate and TD, Nate, my guy, man. What's going on?
Man, I almost feel like we should have started this show off with Boys to Men, End of the Road, man.
Oh,
it's been a hell of a run, man. It's been a hell of a run, man. Yes.
Hey, good brother. You trying to make me have to go get a box of tissues or something? I'm not trying to do that, man.
No way. I might be gone, but I ain't going too far.
Exactly. You still breathing, you know what I'm saying? We still got the three amigos, me, you, and Kenny making this thing work, you know. So speaking of End of the Road, man, Arthur Smith has moved on. He's gonna be the Falcons head coach. We'll get into that, but I wanna kinda touch on another End of the Road, and that's Titans season. The 2020 season, it came to a crashing halt after the loss to the Ravens. I haven't gotten to talk to you on the air about it. So what's your take on that? What are some of the things that you pull away from that game?
Interesting enough, I think, you know, this team had a great season, you know, for the circumstances of COVID, the injuries due to the whole entire team, not just one specific position. But the whole entire team not having an offseason, trying to find your way through losing Dean Pease and corralling your guys on the defensive end. I think it's been a roller coaster ride for this Titans. You know, they started off 5-0. A lot of fans were excited and happy. I think they had a lot of good things going. A lot of dominant forces that they have for their future, but obviously they're going to have to address some things here in the immediately future moving forward in this offseason to try to, you know, cover up some things that they may lose. But other than that, it's been a roller coaster ride. You know, it started off very well in the beginning, and then you seen it started the defense and the secondary woes and not being able to get to the quarterback started to affect the team throughout the middle of the season. And then for them to try to pull together at the end of the season to go into the playoffs with a smooth, straight and focused, determined team. I think they did so, but unfortunately just wasn't able to pull it off against the Ravens.
This game, I think, was kind of a microcosm of their season, starting off fresh, right? They start off fresh, 10-0, second quarter at that point. And, you know, just to drop a statistical nugget, teams over the last 5 years that were down by 10 points in the second quarter and in the playoffs, they were 1-13. But unfortunately for the Titans, that trend was bucked, right, in that game. But it just was so – they started off fast. The Ravens worked their way back, and then they were down, and then they tried to have that late run. Right. I want to get into that 4th-and-2 decision, and I want to get your thoughts on that. I think, you know, even a few plays before then, there were some things that, you know, were questionable. Henry got the 8 yards. Second down, right, you know, you go – a fade to A.J. Brown. Third down, nice play design, right? Jonnu Smith in the backfield, and you get him to, you know, almost catch the ball. I didn't like how he jumped to catch it. I think that's, you know, always a bad thing as a receiver when you don't have to jump. But, you know, I say all that to say, what are your thoughts on the 4th-and-2? Does it go beyond just that particular moment? Would you have punted? Would you have tried to go for it? What would you have done?
I totally agree with you, TD. I think a lot of fans will sit at home and they'll try to specifically pick out one or two plays that were the identity of the loss of this game. And I understand that there's a lot of question behind this 4th-and-2 punt. If I can recall, there was about 10 minutes left in that game to play after that decision. And, you know, from the direction of the offensive game that they had, you know, you're trying to find some momentum anywhere that you can possibly find it. If you can pin these guys back with approximately 10 minutes to still play on the clock, that's a lot of time. Unfortunately, the position that they were in defensively, I feel like entails them to obviously do something that they hadn't been doing at the current time, and that stopped Lamar Jackson and the big playmaking abilities that they were getting passed on third and long and these short plays. I think, unfortunately, you kind of put yourself in a position that where you were relying on the weakest aspect of your team, in all honesty, which is your defense. But, you know, I kind of heard, you know, a couple of debates here and there about the situation. And I take it this way, you know, schematically and looking at it from a player's point of view, I completely understand the fourth and two. With so much time left to play, especially knowing that we're a ground and pound time of possession team and that we're playing a team that wants to be physical and we believe in our guys making plays on the in our secondary. I believe, you know, that's a good decision. But, you know, standing from it, you know, and looking at it from a fan's aspect and, you know, just knowing Coach Vrabel's aggression and his approach toward the game, that he's not going to be run over. You're going to have to literally take it from him. You know, he's made a comment about, you know, even cutting off his genitals if they go and they win the whole thing. Yeah. So you would expect a guy with that type of confidence, with that type of, you know, approach to the game to look at that situation and tell, you know, the other team, well, hey, you're going to have to beat us today because we're not going to just give it to you. But, you know, I understand, as I stated, you know, schematically, as you're a coach standing on the sideline, it's pretty much impossible to put yourself in that type of situation. Mm-hmm. If you go for it, you fail, and you're not expecting them to go the longevity of the field. You're not expecting a 90-plus yard drive, but unfortunately, that is exactly what happened when they kicked that punt off to them. The Ravens came back and was able to put together a 90-plus yard drive and not only take away time of possession, but put more points on the board. So when you look at it after the fact, of course it's a bad call, but, you know, you go into games, and as you know, TD, there's situational football situations in practice that these coaches not only go over for the players, but for themselves as well.
Yeah.
Time on the clock, whether they have a certain amount of timeouts or whatever the case may be. And these are situations that these coaches go through, you know, plenty of times, not only on the field, but as well in the meeting room. So I'm pretty sure after the fact, it's always going to be discussed as a call that they would want back and try to go approach differently. But leading into the fact in the heat of that moment, 10 plus minutes with a situation that you're in, nobody really moving the ball like that, I can understand why Mike Vrabel was just trying to create a spark and hopefully pin those guys enough to put his offense in a position to get the ball back in a good position on the field.
No doubt. And that's, you know, what I was looking for. I wanted that type of explanation for our listeners to hear, because that's what we do. You know what I'm saying? We like sharks. We go deep, deep in the ocean.
Yeah, definitely.
You dig me? real quick, before we go to the break, I know what I feel is the biggest need for them during the offseason, but just, you know, in a few minutes, what would you feel is the biggest thing that they have to address?
Well, shoot, man, aside from losing Arthur Smith, I mean, I know a lot of people would be expecting a player's answer here, but I'm really expecting to see what they're going to do with this coaching staff. You already were looking at a situation where you were investing yourself in inquiring about a new defensive coordinator. Now you lose your offensive coordinator. And those are two major phases of your game. You know, you only have three phases of the game. It's offense, defense, and special teams. So looking at the situation that you're in now, obviously they're set behind the bar, but trying to fill the void of guys that they're probably possibly losing and trying to find a defensive coordinator in the position that they was already in. But, you know, ultimately, when I look at this player position and what they're going to have to either address in the free agency or the draft, is definitely, I feel like, the defense. You know, they're either going to find a heck of a pass rusher, a guy that they can get to the ball consistently or get to the quarterback consistently, or one heck of a DB, man. They're going to have to find a corner that can go out and compete every Sunday and that they can rely on to be accountable on his side of the field and make some plays. So I think Malcolm did a good job of coming along here in the latter part of the season, but obviously those are some things that I think they'll definitely have to address.
No doubt about it. So there you have it. I personally agree with the pass rusher side of things. And, you know, so many people are kind of up in arms about the situation with the salary cap, but there are different things you could do to massage that. So I don't really look at that as something that will really hinder them from making some of the moves that I think they should move. Carl Lawson, the free agent out of Cincinnati, is a guy I think they absolutely need to go after. I think, you know, when you look at an up-and-coming player that you could sign to a solid contract, right, and then he could continue to grow and blossom in your scheme, he's someone that I think is an absolute match. And there are going to be other guys, right? I was on with Jarrett earlier this week, and I mentioned Dee Ford and what the 49ers may do there. So that's another option. If they release him, he absolutely should be, you know, on the phone with the Titans, his agent, whoever, and they need to look at that too, because it's just, for me, like pass rushers and cornerbacks, you can never have too many of them. And I think you can never have too many good ones, especially. And that's what they need, good game-changing players in the back end and the front end. And I guarantee you that will make the defense be a lot better.
Right. I agree with you completely. And ultimately, as you stated, TD, once they can affect that front seven and get some pass rush on a QB, then I definitely feel like it will impact the secondary guys.
No doubt about it. So there you have it. We touched on some changes that are going to happen on the coordinator side of things. And obviously the big news today was Arthur Smith signing with the Falcons to become their head coach. I think we need to get into that, right? So that's what we'll do after the break. Nate and TD, we'll be right back.
To Atlanta where the players play, and we ride on them things like every day. Big beats hit street, see gangsters.
All right, back from the break. Oh, I see you, Kenny. Hey, I see you rocking. It's the last show, so we got to have fun.
Come on now. Come on now.
Right. You hear the music? Welcome to Atlanta.
Yeah.
Hey, Nate, I think Arthur Smith is driving in the Oldsmobile, the 98, driving to Atlanta, and that's what he got playing because, yeah man. Head coach, Atlanta Falcons. What are your thoughts on that deal?
Man, I just got to make sure he's not around here trying to get no Lou Will wings, man. You know what I'm saying? but other than that, man, I think it's excellent. You know, I think it's an excellent opportunity. Obviously, you know, Art Smith has had the rep that he's had in the media for, you know, the last year and a half, 2 years now, for an obvious reason. This guy has put in his work. He has done an excellent job of learning up under multiple head coaching opportunities that, you know, from Coach Fisher to Coach Munchak to, you know, Ken Wisenhunt, Vrabel, and these are all different guys, you know. So he's able to take a little bit of what he's learned from everybody and create his own philosophy. I know he'll be a man of the players, understand and stay connected with the guys and always trying to do what's best for them and hearing them out. I think that'll be something that'll work in his favor. But obviously, this is something that he's been, you know, preparing himself for quite some time. He's sticking around the game. He's learned what he's learned. He's been a student of the game as well as a teacher, I think, this last year, and has definitely paid off tremendously for him. I'm excited to see the direction that he goes with building the staff and trying to create his own culture. But obviously, man, as I stated, you know, Art Smith has been under the radar for quite some time because he did things the right way. Mm-hmm. Kept a clean collar, stayed out of the bad press, has always been a hard worker and willing to learn from others. Doesn't really have a bad scenario with any other guy. I'm pretty sure I can't speak for anyone, but I'm pretty sure anyone that's had the opportunity to work with Art would tell you that, you know, they had no quarrel with him. He's definitely a guy that you can work with and try to aid in trying to get that ultimate goal of a Lombardi. But I'm excited for my guy, man. I can't lie. I definitely texted him today and congratulated him and told him that if there was anything he needed to let me know. But I'm pretty sure that he's has everything under control and he's prepared and ready to move forward in this new position.
Yeah, no doubt. And you said it perfectly. He is someone that and it's cool and really special when you have those rare people that you could say, I would find it hard to believe that anyone would have a problem with him.
And
that's how Coach Art is. And he's been great to us. You know, in the media, I know sometimes the Zooms, you know, he may not be as forward with his answers, but that's just because he's protective of his information. And I know some of us get a little, you know, irritated by that. I just say talk to him on the side and you'll see really how he is. But I think when you look at the balance that he brings, I think you look at just dating back to some of his ties. I mean, a lot of the stuff that he did over the last 2 years, you know, was very similar to what Matt LaFleur did. They kept a lot of that stuff the same. That was a part of him getting that job, right, as the OC. Right. So why do I say that? Well, Matt LaFleur dates back to Kyle Shanahan. I'm talking about going back to their days at University of Washington together. You know, so there is there are ties there, and that's important because Matt Ryan, who, by the way, they're stuck with, right? If they release him or move on, that's costing $49 million. They're not doing that. And even keeping him, that's $40 million. So Matt Ryan in 2016 had an MVP season in a similar scheme. Maybe they could find some kind of success this year and then get their guy at the number four pick, get their quarterback, whether it's Zach Wilson, which I wouldn't pick there, Trey Lance, or even, you know, if the stars align and Justin Fields falls to them, I think he's going to a really good situation. There are plenty of cap issues, but I think that's a good situation for Coach R. I think it's an excellent match. He's going to a place where he won't be under intense scrutiny, so you don't say, okay, there's a small town, a small city, small market guy going to a big market. How would that work? Because right, I would say this, right. I don't know how he would have fared in Philly.
I agree. Hey, the land of the Sharks, baby. Woo,
hey,
man.
Listen, I learned to go deep in Philly, man, because it was, you really got it. It's tough. That's a tough market, you know. So.
Man, you as you stated, though, you know, I was in this league for a period of time where I was able to have a couple different experiences, you know. The coach, Randy Feener, that was let go in Pittsburgh. Now, I was there when he was coming to us from Memphis University and became our receivers coach. So, you know, it's just, you know, these evolutions of these coaches getting these opportunities. I will totally agree with you, TD. It's all about the area, the position that they're in, and the opportunity that they have. I think this Atlanta Falcons team would definitely be fitting for Art. I think the market will be suitable for him as well, as you stated, not requesting too much from him and his personality media-wise, but just trying to get the wins on the board. And I think the Atlanta fan base will be satisfied with that. But, you know, as you stated, man, this is a position that you have to want. You can't go into this and just say, oh, I've been around the league. It's about my time to get a, you know, head coaching job. You have to want to put yourself in this position. And I feel like Art has not only been had the want to, but he's done an excellent job of putting himself around those people like the Kyle Shanahan trees and the Chris Palmer trees, of learning and understanding how to not only create an offense, but to structure a team. And I think he's definitely ready, man. I think it'll be a tremendous run for him. As you stated, it's going to be interesting what they do with Matt Ryan, but I believe they have the pieces there. Julio, I believe, can still play. Obviously, Calvin Ridley has been a huge, asset for this team, and we'll see, you know, what they do with that running back position, because he doesn't have the Derrick Henry anymore, but I believe that he can find something that can be suitable for what he wants to accomplish.
I tell you what, if I was running that draft room, I'm at some point, what? Najee Harris and Brevin Jordan are guys that I Najee Harris, what he's done on the
field.
Make
no mistake
about
it.
And then that gives you that horse. Now, not all horses are the same as Derrick Henry. As Wesley Williams said, he's visiting from another planet. So I'm not saying Harris is him, but you're getting something there that you could work with. And then Brevin Jordan is very similar to Jonnu Smith as far as skill set and just athletic ability. So those are two guys I would go after. But either way, as you mentioned, they're in good shape. They're in good shape. Have a good young center. And Matt Hennessy, the Temple guy, he's coming in, you know, to take over as center. It's a good situation for him. And even though I said I wonder how Coach Art would do in Philly, make no mistake about it, he's a survivor. You look at it, right? He clawed and scratched his way through multiple. There's been turnover on coaching staffs, but one thing has been consistent that whole time, Coach Art right there in that building.
Art Smith. I totally agree with you, TD. And I'll say this, you know, there was a huge, you know, back and forth with me and a couple fans on the timeline. And I understand that, you know, I get it, man. You know, sitting at home and rooting for your team, you know, wanting them to be successful, feeling like you either play football before or you've been watching the game long enough on NBC, CBS, or whatever it is to become a, 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 philosopher on what should happen next, but to be a guy, to be a coach in this profession, it's not easy. And as you stated, this is a coach that has sustained and withdrawn through multiple regimes. You know, when guys were coming in and leaving as a head coach, Art Smith stayed right there. Mm-hmm. He was applying for those jobs with those new head coaches. And those coaches believed in him, obviously, for a reason. They believed in the work he put in and what he was able to bring to that coaching staff. So it's obvious that he is definitely a pinnacle of, you know, consistency, reliability, someone that you will know will come in to work hard, someone that you know that you can build a structure around and will be a philosopher to the game and put his guys in the best position to win. I'm excited to see what he does with that young defense as well. You know, as we stated, I think he's just in a great position right now to flourish, and I'm wishing him all the best.
Replacements. Obviously, you have the in-house staff, Pat O'Hara, QB coach. He's been an OC in Arena League. Todd Downing, tight ends coach. I know they worked closely, especially, you know, an individual period. They did a lot of work together with the tight ends. Coach Art will work with them as well as the receivers. Other guys, Keith Carter. I'm thinking about my Mets, Keith Miller. He's a former outfielder. Keith Carter, right, when you look at him and what he's done with the O-line, those are three guys. Hey, man, we talked about Tony Dews.
Yeah.
You know, and what he's done with Derrick Henry, and you can't forget about Rob Moore. There's five guys on that staff that I think are capable. So those are candidates in-house. Any ones that you would say would be better than the other or more likely?
Well, I think, you know, this is obviously a position, especially with Coach Vrabel, that I feel like he's definitely going to give someone, you know, a new, innovative, fresh face opportunity to fill this void. You know, Art Smith was definitely not – in my personal opinion, not the guy that I was expecting for Coach Vrabel to hire as his offensive coordinator at the time. So it doesn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me, as I would say. It wouldn't surprise me if he definitely gave someone within in-house an opportunity, especially Pat O'Hara. I've actually had the opportunity to work with Pat as well in Houston when we were together in Houston.
Okay.
He's definitely a knowledgeable guy, understands the players, understands putting guys in the best position. And as you stated, to have someone in-house is to know your business. You know, it's to have your to move from the twin bunk in your sister's bedroom to getting your own place downstairs in the basement. Yeah. It's still an outstanding upgrade in the family dynamic. So I understand. And you know the business. You know the family business. You know how the family operates. You know what they want to get done. I think at the end of the day, as much as they will get new coordinators in, I think Coach Vrabel will always have his philosophy and his culture that he wants to be physical, attack first type of football team. And I think those coaches, those coordinators that he brings in will definitely understand of what they've been doing and try to continue on that success of what they've been able to do in the past.
Interesting name before we go to the break. I had a fan just post on Twitter, Jay Gruden. I think that's an interesting name, and that's one that kind of came out of left field, but that's one that may end up being a guy that they could bring in. I wonder how that would work.
Well, Jay Gruden, it would be a definitely interesting hire. I've seen as well, you mentioned on your timeline something about Coach Wade Phillips wanting to get back into football and winning again, as he stated. It'd be interesting, man, because as you know, Coach Vrabel is kind of a unique guy. You know, he wants to not only create a culture of how they play, but a culture of personalities. And when you get guys in this league that have been around, and Jay Gruden's and your Wade Phillips and those guys that have already had philosophies and things that they want to approach, it'd be interesting if those things match with what Coach Vrabel was trying to accomplish in his culture. I think it'd be interesting to see if those ages will match as well. I don't know if Coach Vrabel would do how he would do interacting with different guys of different age, because he seems like the guy that would love to have fresh, new, innovative faces around him, willing to work, willing to give those guys new opportunities. So I don't know if he would definitely dig back into that bag of guys that already have names or reps, and Coach Phillips and Coach Gruden, obviously well-respected coaches, but it'd be interesting to see who he gives this opportunity to.
One other name, Pep Hamilton, I want to put him in the mix, you know what I'm saying, because he did outstanding work with Justin Herbert with the Chargers. We're going to go to a break, and you mentioned Wade Phillips. I think we need to take a deeper dive into that, so we'll be right back. Yet another one, we gotta let this marinate.
Come on.
Yes. You, hey, Nate, I did that one for you.
Oh, man.
Because I know you're a Jigga fan. I know you like Jigga.
Oh, this is perfect.
Dynasty. So, before the break, you touched on Wade Phillips as an option.
Correct.
Obviously, they're looking at multiple defensive coordinators, they're looking at options. Terrell Austin interviewed yesterday. That's another veteran guy. Can you just kind of expand upon what you were touching on when you spoke about the veterans? Because the thing that's interesting is all the success they had with Dean Pease. So my question would be.
Right.
I mean, Coach Pease coached longer than I've been alive, right? I'm 44.
Right,
he coached 47
right,
years.
Right.
So what makes you think that situation worked, and would that be able to work similarly for Wade Phillips?
Well, definitely. I think there was obviously their connection with Dean Pease and Coach Vrabel from the start because, you know, Dean Pease has been around for quite some time,
yeah.
As you stated. He is a philosopher that has been – almost respected just as much as Coach Dick LeBeau. He's did a great job throughout his tenure, and there's been a lot of defensive philosophy that has followed behind what Coach Dean Pease has presented and brought to different organizations. I think this is the thing, though. When I look at that situation with Coach Pease and Coach Vrabel, initially in the beginning, in my personal plan, I feel like that was Coach Vrabel trying to get his foundation started. Trying to make sure that the culture of his team was solid with good minds of guys that been around, understood what it was going to take to win and not only win, but be consistent in what you're doing and that approach to the game and game planning and putting your guys in position to make plays. Now looking at this situation and feeling like Coach Vrabel is putting himself in a position to try to open other doors for guys that have kind of followed in his footsteps, you know, the younger guys that may not be those idealistic names on the board, but just understanding that they know the game and putting them in a position to have an opportunity. As you stated, you know, they had the interview with Tyrell, and I think, you know, looking at his career, he was, you know, the defensive coordinator for 3 years in Detroit, got the defensive coordinator job in Cincinnati. Now, previously here, a defensive assistant in Pittsburgh. And when you look at that, that's a history there. There's a history of knowledge, obviously, that he brings to the table. It's going to be interesting to see if it's consistent with what Coach Vrabel wants to get done, being a fast-paced, disciplined, attack-first football team.
Right.
I think that was something that eluded from what Coach Pease was able to do. He was able to get pressure and still cover on the back end, and I think that was a great fit for those two. But, you know, looking at the philosophies overall, I think it's going to have to match with what the culture that Vrabel was trying to build. I think culture is important when you're looking at who he's capable of hiring here, because this situation is not going to be just presented to a guy that has an ideal about what he wants to do and just throwing it out there. If it's not, you know, consistent with what, you know, this team already has and what Vrabel was trying to build culture-wise, it's not going to fit. So obviously there's going to have to be some guy there that has a history of what he's been capable of doing. We spoke about Coach Wade, and there's obviously a huge history, not only from his head coaching ability, but his defensive coordinator ability and what he's able to bring to the table with his philosophy of sustaining and blitzing the quarterback. I think that'll be great. But obviously, this philosophy that he brings in, the next guy that he brings in, that defensive coordinator, is going to have to allude to what the culture that he's trying to build here in this team and making sure that they're a physical football team.
And you know what, Nate? You mentioned culture, and that's why I shoot down the Matt Patricia idea. because
correct.
Culture is huge. And I know from talking to some of the reporters there in Detroit, even the reporters, like we talked about Coach Art being a guy that you probably won't find somebody that, you know, will say something bad about. It won't be hard to find somebody to say something bad about Matt Patricia. And
agreed.
You look, and that's even coming from the locker room, because when he left, the players felt like there was just a big relief in the building. There was tension. They didn't like that. The reporters, you know, they were back and forth with reporters. And I'm not talking about the joking ones like we have with Mike Vrabel. I'm talking about actual dispute. Fix your posture and this, that.
Right.
Hey, nah, they don't need to go that route. I don't think that that's a route that they should go. So I wanted to personally shut that down, because I don't think that's an option. But when you look at some of these younger guys, Gerard Mayo, what are your thoughts on him coming aboard, especially being as though that connection is there and he is a younger guy? I think when you look at someone like that, because one of the things Vrabel always stresses is the loyalty side of things, and it's just, how do you balance that, right? How do you balance being loyal,
right,
but not trying to ascend and have your own agenda? I think Arthur Smith showed the best way to do that, but how would you think Gerard Mayo would balance that?
Man, well, obviously Gerard being up in New England here, I think this is like his third year up there now, working on their staff, second or third year up there working on the staff. It's right. Obvious to me when he first took the job that, you know, he had aspirations of becoming a major coach of a major phase in this league, not just being an assistant, but a guy that wanted to get his foot in and make sure that he was kind of, you know, doing the same thing that Vrabel did. Coach Vrabel started off as an outside linebacker coach, worked his way to the pass rushing coach, and then, you know, took over the DC coordinator job for Houston, and now as a head coach. I can see that definitely is the pattern with Gerard Mayo. It'd be interesting to see if he leaves a position with Coach Belichick with opportunity, because I've also been hearing whispers that he actually has had opportunity to interview for a head coaching job yes. here coming up himself.
I think
so. It'd be interesting to see if he's willing to trade away that, I guess, rep. I mean, when you're under Coach Bill Belichick, obviously, you're going to be next in line. You just look across the board from Coach Vrabel to Matt Patricia to Brian LaFleur's to Chad O'Shea is the offensive coordinator now in Miami with the outstanding job. And he was once the receivers coach up there in New England. There's a number of guys that become major points, major coaches in this league and major phases, offensive, defensive, and head coaching jobs for these different organizations. So it'd be interesting if Gerard would be interested in trading away that Bill Belichick tree mm-hmm. to now go under Coach Vrabel and try to see if he can get on as a head coach from there. But obviously he's been doing some good things. You know, when you look at that New England's team, the New England Patriots defense throughout this year, they didn't start off well, obviously, with the new bodies in place with Cam Newton and them trying to figure out their way. But if you paid attention to the season, that defense definitely came along. Yeah. And they were able to do some good things to put together a run at the end of the season to put themselves in position to see if they could make it into the playoffs. So it'd definitely be a good opportunity. But I don't think personally that, you know, Gerard would be willing to sacrifice the position that he has now with that organization, knowing what's the future could hold and trying to see if he can come help Coach Vrabel. Wow. I just don't see him taking that opportunity.
Very interesting perspective, and I didn't even think about that, so I'm glad you brought that up. And looking at the overall picture, the thing that I wonder is, would it be better to bring a veteran in? Because, like, how would – if you just say, all right, Shane, I appreciate you, but, you know, we're going this route, how much easier right. would it be to do that if you're bringing in an established guy as opposed to
right. –
you know, so there's a lot that they have to juggle. And that's why, you know what I mean? I don't want to be in that position. I don't envy them at all, but it is what it is. This is what they signed up for, and I'm sure nine times out of nine times, Mike Vrabel will take the responsibility, you know? So
yes.
it's going to be really interesting just seeing how this offseason does progress. And there's still another part of it that we have to get into, and that's the free agents. So we're going to go to a break. We'll come back. Let's get into the free agency. Nothing
if you're glad to LOL, right now.
Wild out. That's what I know the Titans fans want to see this team. They want to see John Robinson wild out on the free agent side of things. Not going to have a lot of money to do that, but if you had to pick three free agents, and it doesn't have to be any particular position, I need three guys, three free agents that the Titans have to bring back this year, because there's upwards of 20 of them. Who would it be?
Oh man. Well, obviously, I'm definitely starting with Corey. You look at what he's been capable of doing. We spoke about the familiarity with him, what he brings to the table. I think he's been doing some great things here. Unfortunately, wasn't able to finish the season how we, you know, hoped he would. Strong and consistent. Ran across a, you know, unfortunate injury there in the last game. But just what he's been able to do throughout this season and the consistency of knowing who they're dealing with, I think would be beneficial, as I've stated plenty of times, for both parties. I think it would definitely give him another opportunity to put another year under his belt and go back to the negotiating table with whatever team it may be to say he's a little more reliable than what he's shown previously to this year. Moving forward, I definitely would say that probably the next guy they're going to have to think about keeping is Jayon. Jayon Brown is, in my opinion, you know, with all due respect to the guys that they have, but he's been their biggest playmaker besides David Long that's come along in that linebacker core. He's been the guy that's been able to make plays for this team, to make plays for that defense. He flies around. I would love to see him get a little better in the passing, passing defense type aspect of it, but when you look back, he was the guy that they were actually using to cover running backs and the most important tight end. So he's their best guy. I think they're definitely going to have to get him re-signed and make sure that he sticks around this team, because moving forward, you're definitely going to have to address that defensive side of the ball when it comes to, you know, linebackers, not only that can make plays in the run game behind the line of scrimmage, but also covering the pass game. And then finally, in all honesty, Janu, it wasn't the greatest year for him, but his intangibles, in my opinion, are something that you have to keep aboard, because you don't know if you're going to find someone else in free agency that's able to do what he's able to do. He's a big body guy that's able to run routes like a receiver, you know, and those capabilities of being able to put yourself in position to create separation at the tight end position is a major aspect for a lot of organizations right now. The tight end position is winning. It's creating matchup problems for different organizations. And, you know, when you take either a safety out of the field that you have to now guard this tight end, or take one of your major linebackers off the play to guard that tight end and take him out the box, it does nothing but open up an opportunity for Derrick Henry, as we've seen time and time and time again. So, you know, I don't know if that's something that they want to test in the market, you know, throughout the offseason, but if I'm looking at it, you know, the situation, he's not going to want much, but he definitely fits the system that you're in. And I would definitely say the last guy would be Jonnu Smith.
I like that three. And mine's very similar. I'm right in line with you as far as Corey Davis being the first option. And here's the deal. If they don't sign Corey Davis, I'm going to drop a name on you and people are going to say, what? How? Finesse the cap. But if they don't sign Corey Davis, I think they need to go after Allen Robinson. One way or another.
Hey, no question about it, TD. Yeah. I just was looking at that list earlier, and I totally agree with you. I actually would love to see them go after Allen, regardless of if they keep Corey or not, to be honest. You do nothing – because this is my thing. You do nothing but put three big body guys out on the field. You put Corey in the slot – let him work just as well as Mike Thomas does in the middle of the field. You get a consistent, reliable catcher with a big body. You know, I know Adam has been doing a great job, but you can't rely on him being healthy, and it hasn't worked out in that situation. So you look at putting Corey in the slot, and that's going to do nothing but up his production anyway. I think, you know, slot guys get more attention than the guys on the outside. So now you have Allen Robinson and A.J. Brown outside that can make the big plays with Corey in the middle. I mean, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, that would be a nice tandem. That's a lot of money tied up in the position, yeah. But it would give you a lot of options because you got $118 million tied up in your quarterback, and he needs guys to throw the ball to. So that's that on the receiver side of thing. One way or another, that's the first thing that I think they have to bring back or address as far as their free agents that are to be. The second, I'm going to go a different route. And you know what? Let's keep it with Jonnu Smith. And I think Jonnu Smith is the second option. You mentioned some of the things that he does matchup-wise. I think the flexibility that he gives you scheme-wise as far as being able to put 13 personnel on the field but flex out to even empty if you want to, you know what I mean? Because he and Ferks, or you could both line them up as receivers, they run routes like receivers. Obviously, Jonnu is a bit more – a bit quicker – you know what I mean, and more athletic with the routes, but still, Ferkser runs really solid ones. So scheme flexibility, I think, is important, just being able to do that. So that's why Jonnu has to be there. But then what was this Titans offense the best at over the last 2 years? Their red zone efficiency. They were number one in 2019, number two this year. Who has caught a lot of touchdowns in the red zone? Jonnu Smith. Jonnu had 8 touchdowns this past year in the red zone. You want to make sure this thing is Ryan Tannehill friendly. And one way to do that is making sure Jonnu Smith is there. So I think he absolutely is a guy that has to be brought back. My number three is different. I think Desmond King is someone that they really have to find a way to keep. And the reason being, he's their best nickel guy. And this is a team that likes to blitz out of the nickel. I don't know what's going to happen with Kenny Vaccaro, if they're going to, you know, release him or what. Because you got Dane Cruikshank coming back. You got Amani Hooker ascending. And obviously, Kevin Byard is Kevin Byard. So will it be too many safeties there? I don't know. But if it's not, Desmond King is their best blitzer. It's out of Vaccaro and King. So I think, you know, when you go nickel, you could go big or you could go, you know, the standard nickel with King. He matches up well against a lot of receivers. Eventually, he's someone that could give you an option. I mean, the guy was an all-pro, a pro bowler, as a punt returner. I don't know when the last time this team had a punt return for a touchdown. You know what I mean? So any help that you could get there, I think, will be valuable. So those are the three guys that I think they absolutely have to bring back first. If you were to have – well, I'm guessing now, judging from your reaction – to my Allen Robinson mention, that would be your one free agent target in the offseason. But I don't want to assume because you know what happens when you do that. So let me know.
Right. Well, that's it. You know, I definitely was waiting on that question to come. I think with the situation with Corey up in the air, I think especially with Allen leaving the Chicago system that he was in, he would be ideal. You know, he would be, he's understanding, you know, that a lot of the plays will come sparingly, understanding that there will be a run first type of offense. But if not him, I would also say this. I have also been interested to see what's going to happen with Kenny Galladay and Marvin Jones up in Detroit. It's going to be interesting. I definitely think that this Titans team should address this receiver room in the free agency, regardless of what happens with Corey. And as you stated, there will be, you know, probably some money tied up into the situation, but, you know, you have to get some tools in there. You have to get, you know, some help in there for not only Ryan, but this situation affects Derek as well. You know, if you can open up this pass game and get some guys in there that can be consistent and reliable and make some plays other than AJ, you know, I think this does nothing but help Derek, you know. So the situation continues to unfold where it all just kind of trickles in together. One phase will impact the other. Obviously, the pass game will open this thing up for this run game. And there's some nice names on this board that I think the Titans will be in position to not necessarily have to spend top market money on, but to get some guys in there that are willing to compete on the level, be physical, and make some big plays for this team.
I absolutely love the Marvin Jones mention. And you're speaking to my heart right there. That is one of my favorite receivers in the league. And I like him so much because he's not a 4-3 guy. He's not a 4-2 guy because you always see, we need to get speedsters. That's the only way. No, that dude knows how to stack a corner, you know what I mean, and make that play. And he's Gumby-like along the sideline. I love watching him play. He is a vertical threat, absolutely. So I like that mention. For me, I'm going to go this direction, and I mentioned him already, and that's Carl Lawson. And I really think you can't win a race if you don't have the horses running it. And they right now, they don't have the horses at the pass rushing position, you know, at the edge position. Carl Lawson will set that edge. He is a guy that is continuing to ascend. He's a young player. You know, he's only going to be 26 probably. He's 25 now, so I don't know when his birthday is. At the worst, he'll be 26 years old when they sign him. Still very young. So you could sign him to a nice deal. Last year, 32 QB hits. Did you hear what I said? 32 QB hits. Now, granted, it was five and a half sacks, but that's impact on the quarterback. That's what this defense needs. And that will only help the back end, which is an area that they need to address as well. So for me, Carl Lawson is the guy that they need to go after. Won't be expensive. He's a guy put his hand in the dirt. He can stand up and be an edge guy that way. He will set the edge. He's solid against the run. He's stocky. He's strong. Like, he brings what you want. And the guy loves football. That's the thing. That's what Mike Vrabel always says he wants. So for me, it's Carl Lawson. You know what? For that pitch that I just did, his agent need to listen. My DMs are open. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Let me break the you don't even got to cut the check. I just want to break the news. That's
at least
all.
Send him a thank you note or something.
Yeah, just holler at your boy, man. Let me break the news. And on that note, we're going to transfer to our last segment, things that make you go,
How do I?
Yeah. Switch it up a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Switch it up just a little bit.
I said I wasn't going to cry.
You about to have me like Trey and Boys in the Hood, man. But real talk, though, I wanted to take the opportunity to thank you for coming on this show, doing this with me this year. It's been a lot of fun. I learned a lot in that fun, so that's definitely – you know, a great thing. And I always love being able to throw it back to you to get that on the field. Hey, man, I've been there in the league. This is how it is. That's an advantage that, I ain't gonna lie, I took advantage of.
And, well, TD, I'm going to be honest with you, man. From the start, when I called, you know, Ryan Porth, and I told him I was interested in doing this, it was because watching you, you know, watching how you was reporting the game, your swag on the sideline with your outfits, man, was very fitting. Everything was cool, man. So this has been a great run. I appreciate the opportunity, not only from you and Ryan, but ESPN 102.5. This has been great opportunity for me, and hopefully looking forward to next season, getting back at it, man. But as you know, I'm not going too far, and I'm always around when you need me.
Yeah, no doubt. And ladies and gentlemen, the Nate and TD show isn't over. It's just going to be condensed, right? We're going to put this on Talking with TD, so we're still going to give you that flavor, that fire that you want. So for you, the listeners, appreciate you guys tuning in. Kenny, always on point with the bumps and making it happen.
Kenny!
It's been a pleasure, y'all. It's been a pleasure. Real
talk. For sure. Real talk. So I hope you all enjoyed the work that we did this year. We'll be back next year. So stay tuned.